Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Conscious Thought with Leo on BBS Radio Talk Show. And I'm your host, Magdalena Winkler. And tonight, my guest will be Jay Hall. Good evening, Jay, and welcome to the show.
Howdy, glad to be here.
Thank you. I was just experiencing challenges, so I'm so glad that I made it. Well, Jay, I'm so excited. We will have a very interesting topic. And you know what? Let's bring a little more confusion to our, audience.
Okay.
Jay, I would like you to give a little background about yourself before we start into our great conversation and interview, so people will know more about you.
Sure. Well, when I was a kid, I always had an interest in science and didn't have a whole lot of books, but I would get books from the library and so forth. And you may have seen those Time Life science books. I ate those up.
So, oh, wow.
I had a friend. I grew up in Northern Virginia, and I had a friend. His father actually worked at the Smithsonian. And I went to his basement one time, and he had all these gadgets and gizmos and such. But I didn't realize how fantastic that was. Of course, on school trips, we went to the Smithsonian, the Science and Space Museum, things like that. Saw my first moon rock, which was pretty cool. But I didn't fully realize the impact of everything until I got older. So when I finally got out of high school and I had to select on a major, I went with geology because I've always liked collecting rocks and fossils and such. But that was in the early 80s, and that, sort of like now, was another time when the oil industry had a great decline. And so I didn't see a fantastic future in that direction. And so I had a good math background, so I decided to switch to math. So as I progressed through school, I took a lot of science classes because I enjoyed it, not just, you know, to fit the requirements for the degree. And so I have about 53 credit hours in different science courses, geology, oceanography, this and that. And so I've always had an interest in that. And so I have taught math. That's my primary thing that I've done through my career. And the other thing I've done is I've worked in the insurance and actuarial. And so in terms of like a catastrophe happening, say maybe, Yellowstone might erupt, that sort of aspect. Of course, there's many tornadoes and hurricanes. That's the more likely thing. But, you know, even now, they've upped the likelihood, say, for example, that Yellowstone might erupt. So all these things kind of come together because you have to apply mathematics to say, how risky is it that California is going to have another major earthquake, for example?
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually, and, you know, I would like to know, how did you actually get involved in the young earth science, and what was the motivation?
Well, primarily, I'm trying to take an omnicultural approach. Now, others have done similar things. Of course, Velikovsky took myths of the past and helped develop some of his ideas of combining it with the history in terms of geology. And so a number of cultures have actually put a more restrictive date. The Mesoamerican cultures say maybe the beginning of time might have even been, say, maybe 4,000 years around or 3,000 years before Christ. So a number of chronologies, say, like the Sumerian king list, also, if you reinterpret it, can give a relatively a young age for the earth. And definitely history seems to stop just a few thousand years ago. So I'm combining that if man... and even including the Neanderthals, that man has always been intelligent and smart. Yeah, we don't have their writings, but in terms of carrying down a cultural tradition, that's meaningful and does relate to even what happened in the past, say like volcanic eruptions and earthquakes.
Well, you know, I mean, I am skeptic myself that the Earth could be, you know, 4 or 5 million years old. But, you know, just few thousand years, don't you think that's just too young?
Well, we have to think of processes that can create things fairly rapidly. And there was a famous case where there was an earthquake off of the Northeast coast, I think in the 20s. I think they call it the Grand Banks earthquake. And there's you know, the continental shelf, and then the land swoops down very rapidly to form the bottom of the ocean. And so an earthquake, a whole bunch of material can travel very, very fast. I think the estimates were maybe up to 40 or 50 miles per hour, because that particular we call it a turbidite. It traveled and broke the telegraph cables. So they're actually able to time how fast it went. And the thickness of the deposit, I don't know exactly, say maybe like 40 feet, something mm-hmm. like that. But the thing is, that happened absolutely rapidly. And so when we see layers upon layers, say on the Grand Canyon, there's different evidences we can point to say, well, maybe it didn't happen over many millions of years, that each deposit happened rapidly, and maybe the time gap between the layers wasn't a big amount of time, that like we cook one pancake after the other, that it mm-hmm. happened fairly quickly.
But then how about all those archaeological discoveries and pyramids there, you know, claiming that they are thousands of years old? How about that?
Well, definitely thousands. It's just how far exactly you go. Because some cultures, I mentioned in my book, it's just, younger science, that the other cultures made comparisons to how old the Egyptian culture went back. And there's some that come with what we call the early, the shorter chronology. And the traditional Egyptian chronology, some of the names were repeated, and like they're two different languages. You know, maybe one was Sumerian and one was Greek or something. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes there's kings that were overlapping. So basically, most of the civilizations, say, not past 2500 BC or not much past that. If you go with the chronologies that say this king followed another king, followed another king, and give the exact times of their reigns. And the funny one is the Sumerian king list, which if you just take it as it's written, you'd have like hundreds of thousands of years. But what I've proposed is that you convert it to from the Babylonian mathematics, which is based on 60, and convert it to our system, which is based on 10, and you come up with about 6,600 years before the great global flood disaster that, you know, most world cultures accept happened a few thousand years ago.
It's, you know, it's just actually in my, you know, boggling, because we are dealing right now, you know, we have this, you know, a whole new paradigm, you know, that the flat earth, and, you know, we have right now the new earth science or young science, and there are so many new stuff is coming right now up. It just look like, I think what is really happening also is that we are actually challenging the status quo.
Yes, yes. That's right. Mm-hmm. And it might seem fantastical, you know, if we ever say get a base on the moon, or if it will be true that someday humans will be dancing on Mars, because some people are trying to plan a trip to Mars and, you know, fund it as almost like a reality show. I don't know if that'll get off the ground. But those are brave people. They're pioneers willing to do something different.
Oh, absolutely. And absolutely, you know, and, you know, look, like I said, we are not here to prove, you know, who is right, who is wrong. We are just kind of, you know, bringing different opinions and, you know, bringing people information and let them decide what they want to, you know, believe or actually go in their own research.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So how long it took you actually to write the book?
Well, I've been since in high school. The late 70s, I've kind of had some ideas in this direction. And over time, I've accumulated more and more aspects. And like I say, part of it depends on indigenous people and their records of the past. Part of it depends on geology, biology, and physics. And so over time, it's kind of accumulated. But one of the more interesting examples that I ran across not that long before I wrote the book was that the governor of the Louisiana Territory ran into some Native Americans. And, of course, they were familiar with Yellowstone and its volcanic aspect. Now, there was a huge eruption by mainstream dating, so like, you know, the end of the world type eruption. But there was a more minor eruption 70,000 years ago. But the Native Americans said, yeah, we know it's volcanic. Well, that would place them at this 70,000-year point. So what makes more sense, to challenge the dating or that the Native Americans have been around in that area for 70,000 years. I say challenge the dating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating, you know, because look, like I said, you know, how can you, you know, bring an idea, you know, how old something is when you don't have, you know, 100% evidence?
That's right. So I'm basing it on certain assumptions, but it's interesting that David Hume, the philosopher, considered like how man has been able to travel the world in in the 50s, Thor Heyerdahl actually got quite a bit of attention. He demonstrated by doing it that the Polynesians could have traveled to South America and that the Africans could have traveled to the Caribbean. And mm-hmm. there was a movie, Ra, too, that documented that. But the thing is that now he's not so known, and people find this as fantastic, that early man could have traveled the globe. But one of the well-known historians of science, he was actually at Harvard, it's George Sarton, S-A-R-T-O-N, in his book, Dealing with Ancient Science, he agreed with that conclusion, that there was an actual a golden age of navigation, and that's why you have things like the Peary Reese map that seems to point to the Antarctic way before modern Western world knew about it.
When we are talking in years, what do you think how old it is, that map?
Okay, you're talking about how old is the Earth exactly?
Well, no. I'm talking about when you were talking about the Golden Age. What was that? What time was it?
Say before 1500 BC. So before the time of the Phoenicians, who were very well known for that, and so that they mm-hmm. learned a lot of their seagoing mechanisms and talents and technology from some prior culture that we may not exactly be able to specify.
So then how would you actually, Jay, explain that, you know, the civilization maybe a few thousand years ago when we are learning in the school how primitive it was, and then all of a sudden we had this unbelievable world flourishing, you know, in the Babylonian time and everything. What happened? Is this just a story, or did it actually exist in a reality?
Well, I think you have to go back that there was a break in the culture that happened before, and that would have to be at the time of, the Epic of Gilgamesh relates it, and that we have some kind of global disaster. And that was a definite break. And so we tend to put early man as a brute in a sense, and it's coming more and more to light that, say, we're related to the Neanderthals. And there's even a site you can go to, 23andMe, the number 23.com, and you can figure out what percentage of your DNA how close you are to the Neanderthals. And for most people, it's like 2 or 3%. For some people living today, it may be as much as 8%. So the Neanderthals were pretty smart. I think there's evidence that they, you know, buried their dead in a ceremonial fashion. They apparently believed in an afterlife. And they even invented a kind of a super glue where they attached their spear, the stone spearhead mm-hmm. to large sticks and other things like that. So we tend to put them down because they lived in caves or whatnot. But they existed all the way from England to the Middle East, all the way up until like the middle of Russia, Mongolia, and that area. So they had quite a spread. So they were doing something right, because their range of their existence was pretty wide. So what I'm saying is the Neanderthals were smart, but unfortunately we don't have the tales of the fantastic things they did. Maybe they killed like so many mammoths in one day or what it might be. We don't have the records of what they actually did, so we don't know how advanced their technology was, except for the few places we found some interesting artifacts, like a flute. There's a flute we found, so apparently they were musical.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, what was the difference, you know, time-wise, you know, between these different epochs?
Well, I'm saying there was some kind of major break, between 2500 and maybe 3000 years ago, and that civilization kind of had to, they had it in terms of the knowledge, but in terms of building things, they had to kind of start from scratch again. And then before that, like I said, one date is from the Mesoamerican cultures. What you do is you take the Mayan dating and you combine it with the Toltec dating, and you get something maybe around 3600 BC to 4200 BC. And even the mainstream scholars admit that that's what their numbers come to, not that they're accepting the dates. But I'm saying the Mayans were just off by a few seconds for the solar year, so time was very important. So we're saying in one sense, yeah, that how could they possibly do this? Their astronomy was wonderful. But on the other hand, oh, well, their traditions of the beginning of time, well, that's phooey. So I'm saying, why not take them a little more seriously, these various mythologies and legends and traditions of the world, like the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we are talking about difference between different, epochs and stuff. So what do you think? How do you feel what's happening right now on the planet Earth? And with humanity, do you think that we may face some very similar challenges?
Well, there's all sorts of paranoia about various, like we had Ebola, and it was almost the end of the world, but yet we're here now. But there could be biological threats, there could be political threats, nuclear war, there's other things. But there's also these natural disasters. Like I mentioned, Yellowstone, they've recently upped the probability that it's larger and upped the probability that it could possibly have a pretty serious eruption. And then there was an article in The New Yorker a while back that a good chunk of the Northwest, near the coast of Washington, Oregon, and just barely the northern part of California, are pretty much going to have a humongous shake. And again, based on the geological evidence, and what they predicted that the ground is going to move like 100 feet in just a matter of seconds, because that's where two plates meet. Remember, the plates can go different ways; they can move side to side, or one can go under the other. But there's so much tension there that it's likely to have a huge move really fast. Because the standard thing is that the plates, the geological plates, move about the rate of how fast your fingernails grow. So you have these different plates around the world, the continental drift idea, plate tectonics, and they say that it happens very slow. Well, that gives evidence. If it could move 100 feet in just a matter of minutes, then that gives evidence to my theory, which says all that happened rapidly.
Wow. This is why I kind of wanted to get you here, because I was so fascinated. And I said, this is just a great way to ask you so many different questions. So, my next question to you would be then, as we are tinkering with so many other stuff, look like pipelines and, nuclear weapons and everything, what happened actually also in Hiroshima, how much impact has that on the global changes and, in the earth changes?
Well, unfortunately, many young people, they don't have an interest in the history, or they don't know the history.
Oh, my God, you just hit my point. It's pretty sad.
Yes. And so even the reality of the Holocaust is not known, or maybe even doubted by many younger people. And so the devastation of a nuclear war, and of course an atomic bomb, is nothing like the devastation of a hydrogen bomb. And so we have to take these things very seriously. But many of the world leaders, some people have even questioned their sanity. So if you combine real nuclear weapons with people that don't have a respect for how valuable human life is, it could lead to a dangerous situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was actually very surprised when I was reading information about the young earth science, that they have young people between 18 and 35 years. Is that correct? Most of them?
Oh, in terms of like they're not interested in history, or from what aspect?
No. I was actually reading that, the Young Earth Science was established 2009 in Paris. Is that correct? Or is that the wrong information?
Oh, I know what you're talking about now. Some of these acronyms can be confusing. It's, of course, the word SCUBA. Is an acronym for, underwater device. But it also refers to the geologists who are, say, still in school and haven't completed their college education. So in that sense, they have these international meetings and they use the same acronym.
Oh, okay. That's where the confusion came in. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So, okay, I would actually like to know, you know, as when we were talking about, you were telling me, you know, about the stories about, you know, from different cultures. So how they are actually relating to all these stories? You were mentioning a little, but I would like to know, you know, more around the globe, how these tribes and, you know, ancient civilization are, you know, handling that, or how they are seeing that.
Sure. There's a number of people that have combined these. The most common tag, if you want to search, would be flood legends, just so that you could have a way of finding them. But I think I mentioned when we spoke earlier that I'm Choctaw. Of course, as you can tell, a very small percentage. But my grandma, you can definitely tell it. But anyway, just the brief description of the Choctaw version of this great catastrophe. Basically, long ago, the Great Spirit knew that man was very, very wicked. So he sent a prophet to warn of the coming judgment. Gradually, the weather got worse and worse, and so a flood arrived, and they have a name for it, Oka Falama, which means returning waters, which is kind of interesting, covering the whole earth. This chosen prophet built a raft out of sassafras logs, which I guess he must have liked root beer. I don't know. But they specify it was specifically sassafras logs. A certain bird was helpful to the prophet. There were two birds mentioned in the story, but one was helpful. The helpful bird was called Puchi Yushuba, which means lost pigeon. That particular bird turned into a woman, and that's how the world was repopulated. Again, each of these stories all around the world, all continents, have different aspects, but there's usually a chosen group that, you know, the higher power contacts, and they find a way to escape from this judgment, and they run into a lot of skeptics. That's usually the common thread. And at the end of it, often there's a bird involved in some way. So all these cultures have some commonalities, and a book that has put them together, a well-known scholar of cultures, an older work, but I'm just saying it's got tons of examples. James Frazier, he was one of the founders of anthropology, and the newer updated version of the collection of these is called The Great Flood, A Handbook of World Flood Myths. And there are other compilations on the internet, but just suffice to say, there are hundreds of these, and they all have some basic similarities. And even, say, the Mesoamerican cultures, the Aztecs and the Mayas, the Olmecs, they believe that the earth itself was filled with water. Now, maybe that's a dim memory that, you know, there was a great catastrophe that was based on a worldwide flood.
Wow. Wow. Very interesting. The reason why, you know, kind of thinking about that, because, you know, I'm in a health and wellness, and, you know, I like things, mystical stories and stuff, you know, and there are a lot of, you know, stories talking about catastrophes in the past happened. One of them would be, you know, the Atlantis. And as I was reading some materials here, there was a compelling evidence about the cosmic catastrophe. They were talking about 9,500 years ago. So that would be very, you know, very close to that, you know, other story, what I was just kind of saying.
Yes, a lot of those theorists, I sympathize with a lot of where they're coming from. I know there's the view that Antarctica was Atlantis. That's an interesting viewpoint. And but yeah, there's there's many of these that I would agree with much of. It just the maybe the dating I would differ with to a slight level.
You know, and another thing, what was very interesting to me, somewhere maybe in the 90s, I was reading Barbara Hand Clough, who wrote a book, Catastrophobia. And she was talking about in that book that a lot of, you know, ancient catastrophes, what happened, that we are actually holding in the human memory. And a lot of those things we are actually repeating because of that. because we are not, we didn't clear our, you know, past memories. What do you think about that?
Well, I go more that it's a carried on tradition, and the cultures that keep that are more like the tribal peoples. So to get it personal, my father told me stories about, say, World War II, the Depression, the Dust Bowl, and such. And those the fact that he gave me tidbits of his own life make those historical events more real to me. But did I get stories like that from my grandmother or grandfather? I'd have to say that not very many. And so the idea is, as other cultures, they continue these memories because they have, say, wise men or wise women that are given the task to carry on those stories, and they are very meticulous to memorize them and to retell them in the exact manner, and then just add what needs to be added if it's a major event.
Wow. So practically, I'm just kind of running in my mind. Do you think that they're actually then changing the history with that? They can actually impact the history of what happens by changing it or adding what needs to be added?
Well, that's the thing. Even some more recent events, the one I mentioned in my book is the JFK assassination. There's so many theories, but yet there were eyewitnesses. There's videotape. There was an investigation. Yet, you know, everybody has their own favorite viewpoint of that subject. So when we go back, if we have written records, you have to compare all the evidence and come up with a reasonable argument based on logic and the evidence and what we have. And also some things we can investigate directly. You know, of the seven wonders of the world, all we have left are the pyramids. Well, you can go to the pyramids and investigate them. But there are written records about that. And so you have to put all these things together. But we all have kind of a worldview, a presupposition. So when we read something, even if it is a scholarly work, we always want to realize we should apply our critical thinking and, quote unquote, not just trust the experts.
That's very true. That's very true. And I think, you know, Jay, I think more than ever, we have to do this actually in every avenue today, because, you know, you can see this in the healing, you can see in the medicine, you can see in the politics if you want it. I mean, we have to question the status quo today.
It's just
insane what's really going on today. You know, I don't know, is this because we have so many different point of views, or, you know, we are just challenging, or we are actually maybe pulling down the veils, what we thought that is a reality.
That's right. And there's a lot of negative things happening, but there's a lot of hopeful things happening. And if we try to search for the truth, I think we'll find it. And whether that's, you know, what's the best medicine or herbal remedies or what. Some people are gifted, and that's a blessing that they have. And some people that I tend to think of, in other words, hope for humanity, is like, I'm sure you've probably seen Rain Man. But that actually refers to the person, Kim Peek, who I think died in 2009. But he had read 12,000 books and knew everything that was in them. And there's also like math geniuses, like one kid who was 8 years old. He could take the number 8 and multiply it by itself 16 times, and he got the answer. The answer has 15 digits, and he got it correct. So the thing is there's great potential in humanity, and you know, if we could keep from having a nuclear holocaust, or if, say, a big rock from space doesn't hit us, something like this. But say if it does, often in trying times, that often brings people together. Say like at 9/11, people were so
exactly.
unified.
Exactly. It is, isn't that, don't you think this is pretty sad that we have to experience this kind of tragedy to bring people together?
It is.
And, you know, on the other side, what I feel that it's pretty tragic is that the human mind is so polluted that, you know, we are totally just, polluting the human mind with the negativity and doomsday, instead to look like you were just talking about, you know, the greatness, what is happening around in the world, and talk more about that.
Right. And the thing is art and cultural things like movies, it would be good if they could bring in some factual elements. And just off the top of my head, I think of the movie, because a lot of these movies I have some negative views on. But one example that's somewhat close would be Troy. And giving the basic story and realizing that these things really did happen. And Homer, you know, I'm sure he added some kind of maybe mythical elements. But the point is that one time, you know, before the city of Troy was discovered, all these things were completely wiped out. Well, you know, in one part of Odysseus's journey, you know, he meets something like a dragon. Well, because of the fact I think the Earth isn't really all that old, I connect, you know, dragons with dinosaurs and make a connection there. And then maybe even today, some isolated places, we may even run into those. So the thing is some of these myths that have been discounted, I think aspects of them may have real historical references.
That's a very, very, very valid point. And yeah, you were talking, I got you some of your questions when you wrote down, it's, you know, Homer didn't talk about the Neanderthals.
Yes, yes.
It's a very, very, very interesting point, you know what I'm saying? So sometimes we are actually, you know, having, you know, told these stories, especially in the schools, you know, look at, I mean, so there are so many parents who are complaining about, you know, the books are not changed, and we are the kids are learning actually old history, and nothing mm-hmm. is getting updated.
Yes, yes. And that's a big motivation of what I'm trying to get across. Is that I'm very much big on school choice, and an aspect, if you'd like to have the classical learning where you learn some of these older scholars, like maybe Cicero or Aristotle or what, or if you want your kids to learn Latin, those sorts of things, that you can send them to a school that does that. Or for me, if I want my son to learn the evidences for a young Earth, I can provide for that either through homeschooling or by sending to a school that's open to these ideas.
What school would be open to those ideas?
Well, generally, it's going to be often the Christian schools. That's okay. It. I don't know how many parochial schools are open to it, but often there are schools that are a little more independent. And mm-hmm. Definitely a lot of the homeschoolers are definitely open to this kind of evidence.
The reason why I'm asking you is that because I found on the on the blog article is the school choice week, and in the article it was that on January 19, 2016, you know, the school choice supporter rallied in Tallahassee, Florida. So I was pretty proud of that.
Yes, yes.
Because I said, oh my God, because I live here down in Florida, I said, wow, you know, here Floridians are waking up somehow, though, do they?
Yeah, and that's good. And I'm glad that there was a lot of movement for that, because in Washington, D.C., they had a voucher program that was shut down for a while, and then it caused such a ruckus that they decide to open it back up again. So I think that's really, hopefully, the direction education is going to go, because it always gets better. If you look at the private schools or the more independent schools or even the charter schools where the teachers mm-hmm. are allowed that more freedom, they almost always do so much better.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, this is what I'm recognizing in at least the last 10, 15 years is that, you know, in so many avenues, we cannot move forward because, you know, either the truth is suppressed or we are not allowed to say the truth. And I think this is a very unhealthy for the human society.
Correct. Correct. And before the internet, one way to get another perspective, I would even listen to, the shortwave radio, and mm-hmm. you hear some interesting ideas. So now that the internet's around, you're able to express yourself. You can do a blog, you can do a podcast. there's so many ways you can hear, well, let's hear what the other side has to say. And I think that's just so important. And in some countries, they don't even allow free speech, and they persecute you, especially if you criticize whoever happens to be the leader at the time.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm talking about, is that, you know, I mean, you know, if you're not allowing humanity to have the free voice, I mean, we are actually not going into the evolution and progressing. We are just actually getting shut down, even though in the past, you know, many culture had to deal with this kind of stuff.
Right. And of course, in our country, the big example would be slavery and the Civil War. And it's, you know, that so many died in that conflict that it's sad. But yet it was a moral issue. And many abolitionists, you know, were willing to speak up against the grain, mm-hmm. even in the, say, the South. And so the thing is that there are a lot of important issues today that, you know, we need to be willing to take a stand on, even if there is a chance that it might lead to some type of a persecution or pushback.
Oh, absolutely. Even today, I mean, you know, even in our you know, alternative media, you know, people are getting, you know, suppressed or, you know, threatened that when they are bringing us some kind of, you know, important information. So that should be maybe, you know, considered. So, but anyway, okay, so what do you think? Give me an idea. What do you think, how old is our planet?
I'm going to put it to thousands, and just to put a rough ballpark, like one number I provide in my book is, say, for example, the Earth's magnetic field is decaying. There's different theories where they say, well, it can kind of regenerate itself, but I say that that's based on a lot of loose assumptions. But taking it in a straightforward way, how fast that is decaying, and some areas are decaying a lot worse, and of course that protects us from dangerous radiation. It's definitely a health issue. But one a paper from a few decades ago, but the math doesn't change, said about 10,000 years. So I'm basically mm-hmm. using that as a ballpark and combining that with things like where most civilizations begin, and combining it thing with like the Mesoamerican chronology and the Sumerian king list. I think all these kind of fit together nicely that it's thousands of years old, not billions, for the Earth.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you kind of, I mean, I was thinking, I had a lot of conversations with others, and we were talking about, you know, evolution. I mean, that would be a very, very slow evolution.
Yes.
You know, because if you compare to that today, what's really going on, look at just the evolution, how unbelievable speed it up is. You know, everything is changing so drastically that, you know, it takes maybe a few years, and we are experiencing such a huge amount of changes. So that is kind of bringing me to kind of struggle to believe that the Earth can be millions and millions of years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, our genetics has some serious issues. I know hopefully we might be able to do some gene therapy to help stop some diseases. But overall, our genetics are getting worse and worse. And that overall because families don't tend to have a lot of children, which helps to say, okay, one child doesn't have the most ideal genetics, but maybe one of the others does. Since we don't have large populations, you know, in general for humans, we're kind of going downhill. So if you try to extrapolate that, well, you could ask the question, well, why haven't we already gone extinct? And there's a real well-known paper in one of the science journals that actually had that title. Why haven't we gone extinct 100 times over? So, yeah, there could be some things we can do to help improve things. But just as it is, you know, we're exposed to different radiation and this, that, and the other,
and just that has naturally a huge impact on DNA. Yes.
And mm-hmm. so we're overall going downhill. So that indicates that maybe we haven't been around that long.
Wow, but don't you think we had actually in the past, issue with the radiations? We just have more because of the technology.
Well, part of it has to do with the sun and other things out in space. So the sun kind of has a cycle. It's usually described as a 22-year cycle, but it goes 11 and 11. And sometimes
yes.
that cycle
okay, I was thinking.
Changes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then every once in a while, it has kind of like an explosion, And that happened in, I think, maybe 1869, and like it fritzed out the telegraph lines. So every once in a while, it has it like a big burp that can cause a lot worse damage. And for now, since all of our technology is based on circuitry and whatnot, if the sun had one of its more major ejections of some of its radiation and matter, it could really cause a pretty serious problem. But too much of that radiation is, bad for not only technology, but also people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you think what we could do actually do in a sense of our DNA, how to protect it better? Do you have any idea?
Well, in terms of how we live, you know, there's the telomeres that tend to limit our age. Mm-hmm. And they've been trying to do different things to kind of slow that down. And one interesting thing is that there's actually a bird. It's called Leach's storm petrel. It's a seabird. And it actually has the telomeres get longer and longer, the opposite. So maybe if we could learn the secret of that bird, we might be able to live a little bit longer. So different creatures in the world have special abilities. And again, I don't that we're going to turn into Superman or anything. But it's just kind of fascinating that each creature kind of has its own special ability. I just wanted to throw out two examples. Some fish can see an infrared, and bees can see an ultraviolet, just to throw out two examples.
Wow, that's very interesting. So practically, they can see the opposite spectrum of light, correct?
Yes, exactly, at the very far ends, right?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And the bird you mentioned, where does that bird live? What area?
In the ocean, I'm not sure. I know that it's named after a British scientist, but maybe they traveled in, Madagascar or somewhere. I'm not sure, but it's called Leach's storm petrel, P-E-T-R-E-L. And I just ran across that recently. But I thought almost all creatures, the telomeres got shorter and shorter. But this one, it goes the opposite, which is pretty fascinating.
Well, I have to research that to figure that one out. That's very interesting information. See?
Yeah. So as much as we can, maybe there's a way to, through genetic therapy, stop Alzheimer's or cancer or some other diseases, that would be wonderful. But once we tweak things too much, I think there could be some dangers and some things we haven't really thought about, unintended consequences, that once we go down that a little too far to try to make improvements, I think it could possibly lead to some dangerous results.
I think you are correct in that sense, because I think also if we manipulate, because it's not just that, that the technology is used to improve the health. Sometimes the technology is actually used against in the case for the manipulation. So that's another danger, because, when we have the information, it can be used in the good and in the bad.
Right, right.
Go for it.
Yeah. I was going to mention, I don't know if you saw that movie with Raquel Welch. I think it was A Fantastic Journey or something like that, but where they shrunk down so small they could go inside the body and they helped heal this guy's disease. Well, now with the nanotechnology, that's not just science fiction anymore. We can actually do such things. But again, maybe as they're fixing one thing, they harm something else. And, maybe the blood cells get damaged.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think because of the technology, we are advancing too fast. I think what is missing point is the ethic, how we are using the technology.
Correct, correct.
And
if we depend on our technology so much,
too
and
much.
Everybody has a cell phone and they're always texting, who's controlling who or what's controlling who? Those are the questions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's very true. And, I had a few other guests on the radio show. We were talking about, the impact of the technology on the health, so that's just another aspect of it. So that we have to take into consideration.
Right, right.
So what do you think? Could the future natural catastrophe destroy civilization?
Well, there's definitely some rocks out there, the meteorites, and some of them are pretty huge, and we keep track of those. And it wouldn't take that big of one to really cause, maybe not the end of the world, but close to it. If it was really a gigantic, if it hit the ocean, it would cause a giant tsunami and go maybe hundreds of miles inland. And of course, a lot of our bigger cities, like say Los Angeles, New York, are right on the coast.
Coastal, you know, cities, yes.
Yes. So that could be something could really change things. I think Yellowstone is a definite possibility of erupting. Again, that wouldn't, it might cool the whole world down, but in terms of destruction, it would be relatively the middle part of the country if it was like the full force, you know, huge eruption it could have. And the slight, the earthquake that's predicted for the Northwest, that would affect those people living there, but it wouldn't. You wouldn't have necessarily a worldwide effect. So,
are we talking about the New Madrid Fault?
Oh no, this is called the Cascadia Plate. In like Washington and Oregon will be the ones that'll be most likely hit. So the people right on the coast, there won't be warning. They won't be able to do anything. So if it's going to be as they predicted, it'll just be a sad tragedy. But it won't have, say, like a global effect. Now there was an interesting thing that was sad, but in terms of like the tsunami that hit Japan with a Fukushima nuclear plant, because then you have a radiation aspect that at least could have a broader effect. But the thing is that I don't think, say, there's going to be like, you know, the day after tomorrow. You know, those are kind of more extreme stories where the world's going to turn into a instant ice age or something. But the main things, I think, would be volcanoes and possibly some major earthquakes and meteorites hitting the Earth. And if it isn't a human-caused disaster, because that's the other aspect.
Yeah, I think that's another one. What is kind of, you know, sad that, as we were talking in the beginning of the show, that, you know, some people just don't have the sense of the value of the human lives, and I would actually add also a value about our Earth and the planet where we are living on it.
Right, and if we realize our life is part of a historical a pattern. You know, we might think, Alexander the Great, look at all those countries he conquered and what. Well, he was actually on a mission. He tried to bring the Greek culture to all these countries. And because that happened, that allowed a greater communication across different cultures. And, you know, he went all the way to India. So I'm sure he learned some things about India that, well, he had never known before. So he learned a lot in the Persian culture and so forth. So because so many different places in the world knew Greek, they were Hellenized in that sense, well, that helped to allow more cultural interchange, in a sense, bring the world together more, even though, you know, it was a great world dictator, in a sense, who wanted to control a huge part of the world.
Yeah. It's really, you know, it's a kind of plus and minus in this at the same time. So, you know, depends just how we are seeing it, yes.
Right. So my moral of that is, if the world is relatively young, all these people through history, even though we don't say have stories of the Neanderthals, I'm sure they had their heroes too. We just don't have the details. And so Joan of Arc or Marie Curie or all these different people through history, that they were one person that made a great difference. Or the scientists who discovered X-rays, which was quite a thing. And we used to, have X-rays in the shoe stores and such. And so it wasn't over time till we realized their harmfulness. But that led to other things like, you know, radiation therapy for cancer. So all these things and those people that did that, you know, they had their place in history. So if the world is relatively short, you don't see yourself as a pea in the sea of billions of years that often, from an evolutionary perspective, is ultimately dependent upon chance rather than a grand design.
Hmm. So then, practically, what's your mission through this young Earth science?
Well, I am trying to.
What would you like? What is that you wanted to bring to the humanity?
Right. Well, I hope that it puts our life in a perspective, and you know, there are lots of wars and conflicts that have happened in the past. But we are part of this story, and we can make a difference. And again, to try to cherish those stories that your parents or grandparents have told you, and realize that all of this is connected. And just to, as a counter that to me, because it is connected to evolution, you know, humans have a special place. You know, the different animals have a special place. The whales, the cattle, and the birds, and everything, and that we aren't just elevated apes. That we do have a special place, and we can think at a higher level, even though different animals have different levels of intelligence. Because if the Earth is really just thousands of years old, the standard, say, Darwin view of how we got here just has to be wrong.
That's beautifully said. That really reminded me that actually just a few weeks ago I finished a permaculture class, and you know that the one of the principles or ethic of the permaculture is work with the nature, care for the people, and care for the earth, you know what I'm saying, and care for the future. So that summarized very much. Well, Jay, okay, we are getting to the end of the interview. It is so amazing. I very much appreciate what I would like you to ask is, do you mind to let our listener know how they can get in contact with you, about your website, your information, social media, and how they can get in touch with your book?
Sure, that'd be great. Well, my main website is youngearthsciencebook.com, youngearthsciencebook.com, and they can connect with all the social media things there, the Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. And then the easiest way to contact me is youngearthscience@yahoo.com.
Oh, awesome. And so is there anything else you would like to actually share with our listeners before we finish?
Well, part of it is we're so awed by scientists, and I respect scientists, and, you know, curing polio, going to the moon, all this. But do realize you do have the thinking ability, and apply a little bit of a skepticism and research it yourself. The internet kind of has almost everything, and dig into it and try to at least look at the alternative viewpoints, even if you don't agree with them.
Oh, that's beautifully said. Oh, great. Well, listen, Jay, thank you so much for your time. And I really enjoyed the information. And listen, just keep doing the great work, and, you know, spread, and just let us know how we can help you guys.
Well, you know, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, you're welcome. You know, I always like to kind of, you know, bring something new, something, you know, a cutting edge. And, you know, that's the consciousness and the awareness to the public, and let them decide from there.
That sounds good.
Okay, well, listen, Jay, thank you so much, and have a great evening. And folks, thank you so much for plugging in, and thank you for joining us. Good night. Good night, everybody.